Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
Yo, hey, all you UFO junkies out there. This is the Warped Reality Podcast, Season 3 bonus episode. My name is Ghost Joe, of course. I am your host, but I have a very special bonus episode for you guys today. It is a John Wright special. For those of you that don't know, John is a UFOologist who volunteers his time with MUFON. He's also a tour guide at the Pine Bush UFO and Paranormal Museum in Pine Bush, New York. Awesome, awesome. If you're around that area, please go check it out. It's a great, great museum with a lot of information. He's a paranormal investigator and a school teacher. And of course, he volunteers his time over here with us at the Warped Reality Podcast. Wait, a school teacher? They have lives outside of school? Interesting. Anyway, John is going to be delving into the life and findings of who some people call the father of the alien abduction movement, Bud Hopkins. You guys are going to love John's analysis, and I implore you to please check it out and leave a review on Apple Podcasts if you liked it. Before we get into this segment, I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about the resurgence of one of the most infamous cryptids of all time, the Loch Ness Monster. Now, the first sighting of the water monster actually was around 565 AD, but it made a resurgence in the 1930s when sightings started to pick up. The most famous photo was that of what's called the surgeon's photo, believed to be taken by Robert Kenneth Wilson, a London gynecologist. I'm sure he's seen way more interesting things than the Loch Ness Monster, and scary. But I digress. It was a blurry picture with a silhouette of a large creature's neck and head protruding from the Loch Ness water. It's the infamous one that pretty much everybody knows. The picture was actually deemed to be a hoax concocted by Mr. Marmaduke Wetherell. Wetherell? Mr. Wetherell, or Duke to his friends, was a filmmaker, actor, and self-styled big game hunter. He had been hired by the Daily Mail newspaper to track down his headline-making monster. He figured it'd be easier to just make it up, which he enlisted his stepson, Mr. Christian Sperling. He said to him, "Can you make me a monster?" Sperling created the head and neck, attached it to a toy submarine, and took a picture of it floating on the Loch Ness. Then they had Robert Wilson claim to have snapped the picture, as he is a well-respected in the community and is known for looking at horrific monsters and large hollow spaces. Get it? Because he's a gyno. Anyway, Sperling had actually admitted on his deathbed to having created the monster. But a recent interest has been looming due to some sightings and pictures claiming to be Nessie. That's another name for the Loch Ness Monster. There were two separate images of the Loch Ness Monster taken just 4 days apart from each other in 2018. The first of those was taken by 51-year-old translator Chai Kelly. She was out near the water with her husband just snapping pictures when she spotted the creature. The next was taken by 12-year-old Charlotte Robinson of Leeds, Yorkshire. She was staying at a vacation lodge at the time when she witnessed Nessie about 50 feet away. But the most recent and supposedly clearest picture was taken on October 8th this year by Nessie hunter John Howie. The shape, estimated to have been around 15 feet long, was slowly moving towards the tree line, John said. He said he was able to snap some photos before the creature vanished into the depths of the Loch Ness. He shared the image with the Loch Ness Center, which said it is potentially the clearest evidence that the monster is real. I'll link the articles with all pictures in the show notes so you can make it your own determination. But without further ado, here is John Wright's segment for the Right Headspace on the Warped Reality Podcast about Bud Hopkins. Take it away, John.
Hey, Joe. Glad to be back. Wish we were able to meet up and do that investigation like we wanted to. If you remember, I texted you my feelings on what I thought was going to happen. And so far, my feelings have been affirmed. Still waiting to see if I can go into that place and do my investigation. So this new segment, I know, Joe, you want me to try and keep it to 10 minutes. I'm going to do my best, dude, to try and keep it as close as I can. But I can't make any promises. I might wind up going over, and you may have to edit some stuff out. I won't be offended if you do. So this new episode, or this new segment, I entitled A Journey into the Regression Abyss. So I'm going to start with an article that comes out of a publication from the APA, the American Psychological Association, called Hypnosis Today. The article that I'm referring to was written by Dr. Michael Yapko, and it was published back in 2011. In that article, Dr. Yapko mentioned that hypnosis took a hit in the 90s because therapists unwisely and incorrectly used this particular method to try and help their patients to, quote unquote, recover suppressed memories. Dr. Joseph Green, who is also mentioned in that article, his research showed that false and distorted memories were produced by using hypnotic regression. He also pointed out that patients falsely believed that memories produced during regression were more reliable than their conscious recollections. In the end, the questionable results convinced professionals that there was very little, if any, value in the practice of doing hypnotic regressions. Now, I also looked up information, and maybe you know her, maybe you don't, but I also found some information from Dr. Elizabeth Loftus. She was known for her involvement in the McMartin preschool sex scandal case. If you guys aren't familiar with that, I would say pause right here, go take a look at it, and come back. If you don't, real quick, it's basically the one that took place out in California. It was the one where the students started accusing the people that owned the daycare of sexually abusing them, that they were sacrificing animals and doing Satan worshiping and all these other things. So take a look at it. You'll see what I'm talking about. Why? Because those children that were involved in that case, it's that type of thing that's occurring just on a slightly different level. In any case, she is one of the leading experts on memory. And she was able to reaffirm the belief. And what we do is we take a look at the research that she was able to come up with. And in her research, she proved that memory is not a solid database that remains intact, but a complex changing mental landscape, which is subject to virtually infinite conditions. Now, what is she talking about there? She's saying that your memory can be influenced by all kinds of different things. And in her research, she found that there are some important connections, such as sleep deprivation and coercion. Basically, what happened in this particular case, even though these children were not put under hypnotic regression, there were things that, even though they weren't regressed, but because maybe they didn't get enough sleep because they were worried and upset about different things that were going on at that time, or the woman who was the therapist that was having the sessions with these young children. And basically what was happening was she was having them by either saying things with a puppet or, oh, come on, you don't want to be stupid, do you? And again, guys, I apologize. You can look this stuff up and you can find out more information on it. But in the end, what it proved was memory is not infallible, that there are certain conditions that can kind of warp our memories, so to speak. And so what it does is it makes you more susceptible to what she referred to as false memories, and that those false memories would produce dire consequences. Now, I know right now you're probably thinking, why is this dude talking about like all these different people and everything else? And this segment's supposed to be about Bud Hopkins. So I'll do it this way. The answer's simple. I want to relay what experts have established as guidelines for regression sessions. So it's like one of those things where it's been a while. I'd love to go back and I'd love to flash forward again. But again, I told you I'd try to keep this to the 10, maybe 15 minute realm. Who knows? I might. And well, most likely I'm probably going to go over that. In any case, its validity as a useful tool. So is it or is it not useful? And then compare it to what prominent and I'm gonna do the air quote thing, ufologists did during their sessions. Now, as far as credentials are concerned, you're sitting here thinking, oh, this guy, he's doing the hypnotic regression sessions, all this other stuff. He got to have a background in psychology. Wrong. That isn't even close. He has a bachelor's of arts degree from Oberlin College. He studied art at Columbia University. One of the things that it never did was mention if he had actually earned a degree from Columbia University. The other thing that you find is that he sold tickets at the museum, the Modern Museum of Art, and that he never attended in no way, shape, or form at any point during his life a medical school of any kind. Now, as far as experience is concerned, he watched professionals perform hypnotic regression for 8 years. Doesn't mean you're qualified or you're anything close to an expert in regression. Hell, I've had plumbers come over to my house and fix my water heater and replace my water heater. And I've watched that for 26, 27 years. Just because I've watched the plumber come into my house and do that stuff doesn't make me qualified and it doesn't make me an expert. That just means I've observed. Doesn't mean that you can do it and that you can do it at a very high level. Now, as far as his, what got him kind of kicked off into the whole ufology thing from art, Bud's first encounter occurred back in August of 1964 in Truro, Massachusetts. If you're a Cape Cod fan, then you know that name. He notified the local Air National Guard of an incident. He wasn't happy with the response that he received from them. So he concluded, well, it's got to be a cover up. can you say paranoia? So from that point, he actually began collecting information from people claiming to have encounters or contacts with aliens. The key item that he would begin to focus on is two words, missing time. And something that we heard with the Hill case, with the Fuller book and with the movie and all the other stuff that went with it, this becomes like the key term. You can't have an abduction case without the two words, missing time. While working with these missing time victims, he dismissed their conscious memories for more alien explanations, believing memories obtained during regression were much more reliable. What was it that Dr. Green mentioned in the Hypnosis Today article? Research showed that false or distorted memories were produced by using hypnotic regression. Patients falsely believed that memories produced during regression were more reliable than their conscious recollections. The majority of his cases developed an overarching theme. Number one, women were being abducted so they could be impregnated to create these hybrid children so that the aliens could repopulate their species. Two, that many, if not all the subjects, have been abducted many times throughout their lives. Three, almost all of the interactions that were relayed to Hopkins and company were frightening and somewhat violent in nature. In other words, traumatic. So the big question is, why the similarities? I always ask this question. What's the common denominator? Whether you go from one case to another case, there's one common denominator. That common denominator is Hopkins and company. His beliefs of what was happening permeated every aspect of his investigations. A term comes to mind, confirmation bias. Had his mind been made up prior to the investigation? Well, I'm thinking in most of these cases, yeah, because that's what he went out looking for. So the problem is if you have that in your head, no matter what you look at, no matter how you look at it, it's always going to come back to that one thing. And I've always said this to people. One of the things that you have to be is objective. You can't lose your objectivity. You have to be as scientific about these things as you possibly can. Moving on. He believed that aliens had the ability to suppress memories of traumatic events, which stands in stark contrast to what experienced psychologists and psychiatrists have documented about trauma. So examples of stories. I could give you a couple examples just from my lifetime, right? So here's one of them. I was 6 years old. I can remember everything that happens with it. So I'm 6 years old. I go running out of the house. My brother is jumping on his bike. It's late summer, late August, early September. I ran outside in my little fuzzy, well, they weren't fuzzy, but fluffy slippers. And my brother was getting ready to ride his bike. So I jumped on the back of the bike. Now, from there, one of my slippers gets caught up in the chain and gets pulled into the sprocket of the bike. And it just starts mashing up the toes on my left foot. That's why my pinky toe and what would be basically like the ring toe are a little bit smaller than the other ones, because it sheared the tips off of my toes. I remember that. I remember going to the doctor's office. I remember my parents, my uncle, my aunt, my other uncle holding me down on the actual operation table in the doctor's office, and the doctor sewing up my toes. Another one. I was 12 years old. We're on our way home from marching band practice. This was in October. This was a totally different year. This was when I was in fifth grade, and Don McLean's song "Miss American Pie" comes on the radio, and you have my dad, my brother. My dad's driving. My brother's in the shotgun seat, and I'm in the back. My dad had a Gremlin at the time. It was a two-door coupe, so I was in the back. I had no door, no way to get out of it, right? And as we're singing that song, a buck comes running from the left side of the road, comes shooting out in front of the car, hits the front of the car. The head goes through the grill of the car. Its backside comes swinging around, goes underneath the front left tire, and it actually pops our car up onto two wheels. And we rolled like Dukes of Hazzard style down the road and started rolling toward a pond that was on the side of the road. My brother, thank God, he looked over at my dad and with everything he had pushed off of his side of the car against the door and shoved my dad back to his side of the car. And it wound up bringing our car back down to four wheels where it bounced and everything. And we wound up getting stuck in the mud. We had to walk down the road about a mile or so to find a house that actually had somebody living in it, because it was all back roads. And at the time, there weren't a whole lot of people living in this area. Finally, we found a home, made the phone call, got my grandfather, my grandmother, my mom on the phone, and somebody was able to come out and help us out. Car had to sit there until the next day because there were no 24-hour towing places. The next one I would use is the Kennedy assassination. My dad's almost 80 years old, and he remembers exactly where he was and exactly what he was doing when it happened. So when you experience those types of trauma, you remember almost everything that goes with it. So if these people are having traumatic experiences, it's going to be one of those things where it's going to be really difficult for that stuff to just disappear. It's not there because it didn't happen. Anyway, I'm moving on. So basically what happened is Bud believed that people with scars had been tagged or implanted so aliens could track, control, and abduct these people again and again. When faced with the question of whether or not their subjects' clients were influenced by popular culture, Hopkins and company argued that they weren't. A gentleman by the name of Martin Kottmeyer proved otherwise. He developed an extensive list of UFO alien movies that portrayed what was being reported by witnesses. So one of the examples was Killers from Space, 1954. Scars and missing time were the main themes. Mars meets needs women, 1968. Crossbreeding of aliens and humans. Third one, Invasion of Saucer Men, 1957. They were bald, big-eyed, and had no nose. Now, people are going to make the argument that the grays, all this other stuff, oh, well, it wasn't in popular culture. Nobody really talked about these things. Here's three examples right here that are talking about those things. And I only did three. This gentleman's list goes on and on. And again, I'm trying to squeeze this in, and I'm at the 15-minute mark, and I'm maybe only about halfway through my stuff here. Now, I had a bunch of cases that he worked on that I wanted to do reviews about those cases. So I'm going to try and stick to one case. I'm going to talk about some basic rules, and then I'll conclude it so that this way Joe doesn't get too mad at me for this running over too long. So some specific cases. A quick review of the guidelines that were set forth by Dr. Martin Oren. Number one, no contact or conversation between the subject and the hypnotist before or after the sessions. Number two, all sessions are recorded from beginning to end. Number three, use outside evidence to corroborate information that comes from the sessions. Number four, no one other than the hypnotist and the subject should be in the room. Number five, the subject can never be told they will recall anything prior to being brought out of hypnosis. Why? Because as Dr. Martin said, it's going to cause pseudo memories. Those pseudo memories will become a part of that person's conscious memory. Now, the one case I'm going to look at here is the case of Virginia Horton, which took place in 1979. She was a 35-year-old businesswoman who lived in New York City. She was told about Bud Hopkins, came into contact with him somewhere along the way, and she told Hopkins about a weird incident that she had remembered from when she was about 6 years old. Excuse me. And of course, we have the two words, experienced missing time. She mentioned a cut that she had on her leg, but she couldn't remember how it had happened. Now, Virginia's mother was interviewed about it. She couldn't recall the incident either, which indicates probably it wasn't anything major. I could tell you that if it was me and you asked my parents about how I sheared my toes off or how when I was 4 years old, I bit my tongue off and they had to sew it back on, she'd be able to tell you everything that happened with it. So if it was just a minor boo-boo, then just like any parent, you're probably not going to put a whole lot of time and effort into remembering those things. Anyway, Hopkins had several discussions with Virginia prior to the regression session. This is his standard MO, folks. This is a standard modus operandi. Had she seen UFOs? Had she dreamt about UFOs? Had she seen anything unusual? Had she seen any unusual craft? That sort of stuff. She told Hopkins about a dream she had when she was 13 years old, in which she was visited by a UFO nut and that she had traveled through space. She also said when she was younger, she wanted to be an astronaut. Well, this violates guideline number one. Next, the session was conducted by Dr. Aphrodite Claymore in the presence of Hopkins. Oops, violation again. Why? She just violated guideline number four. Why? Because the only person that should be in the room is the person conducting the regression. Shouldn't be anybody else. Why? Because anything that they do, anything that they say, anything like just a slight breath or a, oh my God, that can all influence the person that is under hypnosis. Moving on. Virginia did not recall seeing a UFO or being taken on a UFO. She did not remember what aliens' eyes or hands looked like. And she believed her scars were from a scalpel, but could not provide details. Like who, when, where, why. But Hopkins believed this confirmed his suspicion, which violates guideline number three. There is no outside corroborating evidence. And again, guys, I would love to go into other cases here. You got the Stephen Kilburn case. There's a couple other cases on top of that. But again, I'm pushing on 20 minutes here. I'm sorry, Joe. I'm gonna do my best right now to wrap it up. Now, he went on. Bud Hopkins went on to write a couple more books. One of them was called Missing Time. The other one was called Intruders. And of course, this also gives rise to other people, Whitley Strieber and so on. Anyway, moving on. In the afterword of Missing Time, Dr. Claymore, who's the one who did the majority of the regression sessions, said that after 2 years of joint effort with Hopkins, I cannot say whether the experience recounted by the subject was real or not. Let me repeat that, folks. Her exact words were, I cannot say whether the experience recounted by the subject was real or not. I do not know, nor could hypnosis claim to establish whether the UFO experience actually happened. In the end, Hopkins' thoughts, his beliefs, his convictions, clouded his objectivity. Those thoughts bled into everything that he did. He lacked a serious scientific approach and incorrectly implemented techniques that were deemed unreliable by the experts decades earlier. And this was all in an attempt to fulfill his need to provide abductions are real, or proof that abductions are real. Unfortunately, his actions set a precedent for others. We know that he appeared at MUFON symposiums, all this other stuff. There are other groups that have done those things. And you guys know, I'm a member of MUFON. I am a UFO investigator. And unfortunately, other people are going to buy into this stuff. Now, there are other people that were part of this, and they all came out afterward and totally disavowed any involvement with him. Now, when the actual experts weigh in, the amazing part is they're dismissed. Like, you have all these people, whether you want to call them the ancient alien folks, and I won't give the names because I'll probably wind up with like a libel suit or some other thing. They all use the term mainstream scientist. Oh, it's mainstream. Since when is being an actual expert in a particular field of study a bad thing? It's amazing. It's like they have this thought that having an education is a hindrance to real research. Anyway, important thing to note is that all of Hopkins' subjects had similar stories and accounts. And I come back to, what was the common denominator? Why were they all the same? Because Hopkins surrounded himself with all people that had the same basic ideas and beliefs. And he and some of those people were present during the sessions. They violated the basic rules of what you're supposed to do in a hypnotic regression session. You can go through, you can look at all these other cases and do your research on your own. I'm going to sign off for now. Hopefully, this will leave you in a slightly better headspace. Now, Joe, I apologize. I went over. I'll try to keep it under next time. Sorry.
Thank you so much, John, for that awesome segment. And by the way, thanks for keeping it under 10 minutes, buddy. 23 minutes. All right. Great, great. No, but I told you I would never edit it. I love your information and stuff. And to me, it's extremely interesting. And keep doing what you're doing. With that being said, thank you guys for tuning in. And I'm sorry I couldn't get you guys a proper Halloween-esque episode like I did last year and the year before. It's been kind of crazy with work, and my job sucks. So, have a great night, and I will talk to you guys next time. Later.
Thank you for listening to the Warp Reality Podcast, and thank you to all my guests and contributors that helped make this show possible. For more episodes, guest info, social media links, merch, and more, please check out warprealitypodcast.com. If you have a paranormal experience you would like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, I'd greatly appreciate it if you could leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or WarpRealityPodcast.com. Have a great night, everyone, and don't forget to change your thoughts.